May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad, where every week they will be sharing their experiences, insights, and opinions about working in the technology industry.
Simply the best.
We're back for another episode of the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad. And as always, we're trying to kind of give the most impactful, I guess, subjects a bit of conversation and kind of discussion. And this week, we're discussing imposter syndrome and the effects that imposter syndrome is having on the tech industry and on individuals. But I guess the first question is, Saad, have you ever experienced imposter syndrome? Or in your opinion, what is the definition of imposter syndrome?
So there's two questions there.
Yeah, two questions.
I'll tackle both of them. So the first one, obviously, imposter syndrome, I think, is very well known. And I think it hits people from all types of backgrounds and industries. So it's the inability to, it's like doubt in yourself and your abilities, right? There's many definitions out there. But if we take like a clear cut definition, the feeling that you're unable to carry something out or you're some sort of a fraud, even though you might be in that particular thing.
Centers around self-doubt.
Yeah. So it's like doubt in yourself and feeling like you're some sort of fraud.
And like worthiness as well.
Yeah. Even though you might get validated by others, you know, you might be in a position where everybody else is saying that you're doing great and, you know, you should be there and you earned it and all of that is that continuous self-doubt. So the definition is many of them, you know, but it centers around self-doubt, as you said. Now, the second question is, have I ever gone through it? Still going through it now. You know, my particular take on it. I've got I guess would say my own way of thinking about imposter syndrome. I don't ever believe it goes away. I think it creeps in and out of your, you know, it comes in stages. So for me, it always tends to creep when I'm taking on more responsibility, for example. But also, it doesn't always have to be centered around your professional life. I think it can hit you in your personal life also. For example, I'm on this journey at the moment. I've just started trying to gain my health back and make better choices when it comes to food and working out and stuff. And even then, the imposter syndrome can hit you and you'd be like, you sure you want to do this? Like, just order a pizza and call it a day. So I think it can hit you in different areas of your life. I don't think it's just on a professional standpoint. And I think most of the articles and information that I've seen around it, it always tends to be centered around the work life.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the correct way of tackling it, because it's a psychological problem. It's a psychology problem. It's a problem which needs to be tackled from a mental standpoint, not a work standpoint.
How you perceive yourself.
Yeah. And I think you need to take into consideration that everybody's different. And some people struggle with self-esteem. Some people struggle with talking, what would you call it? Like presenting, you know, public speaking and stuff like this. And imposter syndrome might affect them in different ways. So they might be really good at their individual job, you know, as an engineer, as a manager, as a designer, whatever. But when it comes to the public speaking side of things, the imposter syndrome will creep up. So it's very strange, because it's like it comes and goes, but I think it's a very powerful tool. I don't think it's something you should battle and resist, because if you continuously resist it, you're never going to become comfortable with the uncomfortable. And becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable is no doubt the way to prevail and to get good at something.
Because I think sometimes you're forced to, though, isn't it? Like, as in, like, you're forced to kind of address the imposter syndrome, especially like if it is in the workplace, because then, like, say you got promotion and you're like, oh, I'm not worthy of this promotion. Like, you know, I'm not good enough. Don't know why they chose me and not this person over there. They're way better than I am. But, you know, I find myself in this position. You're still going to like do your job, and you're not going to go back and say, do you know what? I refuse this because you should go to someone else, or like, I'm not the person for it. Like, you're going to still try. And even though through trying, you might not be thinking you're meeting your own expectations for how you imagine the role should be fulfilled, you still through trying could be, you know, can do an excellent job kind of in that new role, right? Or in that new kind of position. So I feel like sometimes you're kind of forced to, I guess, kind of combat the imposter syndrome. And it's like, even though you have those feelings, you have to kind of persevere and just kind of go work your way kind of through it. Whether or not it means that the imposter syndrome disappears, I'm not sure. But it could always be something that kind of lingers there. It's like, I kind of liken it to like a bit like body dysmorphia in a way. It's like, for instance, you go to the gym like all the time, and then like people will compliment you and say, you know, you've gotten really hench, or you've slimmed right down, or whatever it might be. But then you go home, you look in the mirror and you're like, oh man, like
I'm not seeing what they're telling me.
Yeah, like I'm not like seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
I kind of liken that to kind of imposter syndrome, where you might have all of this kind of validation from external sources, but in your own mind and how you perceive yourself when you kind of look in the mirror or go home at the end of the day and reflect, it doesn't balance out, right? Like you see yourself as being kind of much lower down on the scale compared to how other people see you, because you're getting those affirmations, right? You're getting everything kind of validated through the promotions, through the credit, through the praise, through the bonuses, like pay rises, whatever it might be. It's validating that you're doing a great job and probably better against your peers. But for some reason, you still feel like, oh yeah, I'm not good enough for this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like I've experienced that like a ton of times where I've received like multiple kind of promotions like throughout my career. And then as soon as like I get to get the new job or whatever, I'm just like, am I really the right person to this? Like compared to the last person that was in that role, like how do I kind of weigh up, and like how do I weigh up to kind of other candidates that were out there?
Mm.
Like, am I the right person? Am I going to be able to fulfill the role in the best way? And you kind of lose sight of like your own kind of uniqueness and kind of skills, which might have actually kind of drawn the employer or your boss or whatever to putting you into that kind of role. So like for me, I kind of see imposter syndrome as like any time in your kind of life where you're experiencing like a significant growth.
Yeah.
Right. So you're literally, if it's a promotion to a senior role, you're learning a whole new set of skills, right? Like it's not just, this is what I don't think people realize, is that when people get promoted, people just think, yes, I got a new title, I got a bigger salary, and they think I can continue doing what I was doing before.
Yeah, that comes at a cost.
Exactly, because what I've come to realize is that when you get promoted, yes, those things are true, but there's a ton of new skills you now have to learn. Do you know what I mean? Like there's so much more that you have to now kind of obtain, and kind of, I guess, many more strings like to your bow now that you have to add. And I think people kind of lose sight of that, and they don't see it as a learning journey. They see it as a continuation of where they were before.
I think also it's the anxiety of performing.
Mm.
Like, you know, when you're pushed in a particular direction or a new role or something like that, then naturally you've got this anxiety to want to perform, you know, and there's a big gap. So you might go from like a senior straight into a director. You might like miss the head, or you might, you know, something like that. That's overwhelming.
Mm.
It's overwhelming, you know, because not only have you got these sets of skills that are tangible that you have to adapt to, but there's a lot of skills that are not tangible.
Mm.
So a lot of the people skills and a lot of the soft skills that go unsaid, you know, and it's like, now I need to adapt to this whole new person. And then you start thinking about, am I being authentic though?
Mm.
You know, or am I just doing this because I'm trying to meet a KPI or something like that? And I think it's a brutal cycle of just uncertainty and continuously going back and forth with yourself. Am I good enough for this? Actually, I am good enough for it because there's the evidence that I delivered that project and that project. But then was I being authentic in that project or that meeting? Or, you know, am I really expressing my feelings the way I should, or my opinions the way I should?
Mm.
It's a brutal cycle.
Mm.
And that's why I follow the philosophy of, I don't know if this is the correct way or not, but it's just worked for me, is that stop resisting it because it's never going to go away.
Mm.
Like embrace it somehow, try to come to terms with it. And the most important thing that I could probably share that has worked for me is try to identify the triggers.
Mm.
Like journaling is really good, especially when you find that spike in that imposter syndrome. Try and identify what that trigger was. You know, was it, did you get more responsibility on a project? Are you now responsible for one-to-ones? Are you now, you know, did your whole team go on holiday and then you have to deliver the thing on your own? Like, what was the trigger? Identify that and take note of it, because next time it happens, you can then see if you've become better at that particular thing, and then you can lower the imposter syndrome around that specific thing the next time. The problem is we try to always tackle things at a whole, you know, and not knowing that the imposter syndrome has quite of a stronghold. It's a strong feeling. And that's why there's so much research behind it in the psychology space.
Mm.
It's actually mentioned in the American Journal of Psychology.
Mm.
It's very well researched and written, and it has such a stronghold. And I feel like sometimes we are attacking it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like we're going towards it like it's an enemy, and that's wrong, because you need to try and make it become on your side. Like you need to become an
ally. I hear what you're saying. Because like I've definitely seen it as an enemy. Like
it's not an enemy.
I know, but I've definitely seen it that way.
It's actually, for me,
it kind of alters how you feel, how you behave. Do you know what I mean? Because like, you mentioned like a keyword called authenticity, right?
Mm.
And like it's kind of, it makes you question, are you being authentic, or are you trying to kind of live up to particular values and rules? Like I remember like when I first got a senior kind of leadership role, kind of in UX, like everyone else, so I was like a head of design. Everyone else who was my peer was minimum 8 to 10 years like older than I was, yeah, at the time. So I was thinking of, okay, what are their expectations of me and kind of what a head of in the department kind of looks like and how do they talk and all this kind of stuff. So I adapted myself to try and fit with a particular visual kind of narrative and started like wearing like half zip fleeces and, and boots and stuff like this. I'm just like, until at one point I remember I went to a birthday party and then I literally came after work and then one of my friends was like, why have you come dressed as someone's dad? <You know? laughs> And then it just made me think, I was like, damn, like, yeah, like this isn't me, you know, like, but I, the imposter syndrome that I was experiencing
forced me to make decisions
that were kind of unnatural to kind of who I am and kind of where my values are and kind of what my likes and dislikes are. And then it was that moment that kind of made me feel like, yeah, do you know what? Like, I don't have to hide myself or kind of lose part of myself in order to fulfill a position, right? I'm in that position because of who I am and because of what I've achieved and because I've proven that I can, you know, can execute and kind of do certain duties particularly well. So that's what I'm supposed to bring to the table. What I look like, how I act, etc., they're all kind of secondary to what I bring to the job. But that was like a kind of learning process for me. Like, I had to really like dig deep and say, do you know what? Like, no one cares if you come into work in a t-shirt and Jordans and whatever. No one cares. Like, they just want to know that you can do the job. You can manage a team. You can scale the team. You can have an impact on the business and the customers. That's it. So once I started shifting my mindset towards that perspective and just focusing more on what can I do in the role, then I was able to kind of shift myself slowly out of this kind of imposter syndrome thing. But it's a journey, you know, it's still something that I would say that I experience even today, you know, because not from less so on the, I guess, kind of the visual aesthetic of, you know, kind of what a leader looks like and all this kind of stuff, but more so on the fact that, like I said earlier, when you're moving into a different position, you're learning a new set of skills. So from moving from a head of UX to a director of UX, I was moving from focusing on one business. Like, that was just my remit, was just this one business that had multiple kind of products in fintech. And I just had to have kind of oversight over that. The bottom line, like how we make money, all that kind of stuff is pretty much the same across all the products.
Right.
Now, shifting to director of UX, I'm having to look after multiple different businesses that operate in different ways from an experience perspective, which is mind-blowing, right? And sometimes it can be kind of overwhelming because you have to remember how each business operates, what their uniquenesses are, kind of how they make money in different ways, how they, because they've got different ways of engaging with customers. They've got different historical data when it comes to their relationships with customers, all that kind of stuff as well. Their teams are different maturity states as well. So I'm having to constantly kind of assess that and make judgments based on the current life stage of that particular team compared to other teams. And I can't, you know, judge one team against another because like that's unfair. So, you know, there's all these kind of things that kind of come into play and like constant like context switching in the beginning. And, you know, even sometimes now you kind of feel like, this is a lot to learn. Like this is a lot that you need to kind of figure out in your head, but it's just a skill. Like it's just like you're growing as a leader. You're obtaining this new skill of being able to kind of switch context multiple times. You're obtaining a new skill of how to manage multiple businesses, manage multiple people across these businesses. Like that's a new skill that you're learning that eventually you're going to master. And that's the way that I'm kind of looking at it, is that eventually I will master this skill. I'll be able to operate at a particular level and then I'll be able to take that to my next position, or if this position grows even further, I'll be able to take those learnings and kind of apply it across. So I'm seeing it more now as a, like a learning opportunity, like a learning about myself, but also a learning about the industry that I'm in and, you know, kind of how kind of big it can actually kind of be as well.
Yeah, no, that sounds like you're on the right track. And I think the way you have analyzed that and approached it is a good take, because environments change, work context changes, people change, your team changes, and you're going to face change all the time. And I think having that positive outlook that, okay, today might not be like yesterday and it's not going to be like tomorrow, but what can I deal with today? And that's why mindfulness is so important, you know, even if you don't practice it specifically, but just being in that present moment is very important, because, you know, things change radically. And, you know, tomorrow you might find yourself in a meeting where your bosses say, you know, Jay, I think you're ready for the next step. And you're like, whoa, hold on, I'm not even used to this one. You know, you don't know where people are going to push you. You don't know where people are going to test your abilities.
But that comes down to perception again, right?
Yeah.
Like you might be feeling a certain way about yourself, but your counterparts, your boss, your family see you completely differently.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They hold you at a higher regard than you do your own self. So like, yeah, you're right. You don't know what's around the corner.
You don't know what's around the corner. And it's important to speak to people as well. And, you know, you don't have to specifically say, you know, you're going through anything mentally X, Y, and Z. You can keep that stuff to yourself. But it's important to speak to people about your progress, your offerings and the things that you need to get better at and stuff like that. And being open with those conversations, because the reality is we're not perfect.
Mm.
You know, we're not, we've all got 24 hours in a day, you know.
Is it the same 24 hours though?
No, I don't, that's a whole another episode about efficiency and productivity. But I do believe some people, you know, operate differently due to efficiency and productivity. But so there's something that I have learned over the last few years that has helped me a lot with the imposter syndrome. And actually I started to apply it to a lot of different areas of my life, but it's called radical acceptance. Radical acceptance.
Interesting.
And radical acceptance is where you accept something or embark on a journey to reach that acceptance in a very, very radical way, where it allows you to be more authentic with yourself. Mm. Let me give you an example. Imposter syndrome is very, very widespread amongst engineers.
Mm.
I'm speaking from the perspective of an engineer, because I'm an engineer myself. Engineering, web engineering, programmers is very widespread.
Mm.
And I believe the reason for that is because there's different entry points to becoming an engineer. For example, you can go the traditional route and go to university and get a computer science degree and then specialize in a specific thing and then take your career down that path. Or you can go on YouTube and teach yourself how to code.
Mm.
And teaching yourself how to code means a few things. It could be web programming, it could be machine learning, it could be data science, whatever. But you just teach yourself the fundamentals of programming, right? And you become good at it. And then someone hires you and you're sitting next to someone who struggled 3-4 years through university and you just spent the last year learning how to code and you're both being paid the same salary.
Mm.
And then there's also the whole boot camp route and accelerating your learning and just being dumped into the industry. And then you find your way that way, scrapping through the different roles and skill sets. And I find that all of those methods are fine.
Mm.
They all have their benefits to them. But I find that they heavily contribute towards the imposter syndrome, especially the non-traditional routes.
Mm.
Because the good thing about university is that it offers you a lot of theory. But we know now in the industry, especially when building products, is that practicality is imperative. Like if you do not know how to apply any theory, you're not going to go very far.
Mm.
And what these engineers have done, the last two groups, is for the teachers that are making these engineers, is that they touch upon theory, but they get straight into practicalities very quickly.
Mm.
That leaves a massive hole of knowledge gap within the individual. So coming back to how does that tie into an example of radical acceptance, is that as an engineer who hasn't taken the traditional route, you need to now radically accept that there are some knowledge gaps that you need to work on, and you need to be working on those knowledge gaps outside of your work in order to fill those knowledge gaps.
Mm.
And radically accepting that is by saying to yourself, literally, it's okay that I don't know what algorithms and data structures are because I didn't take that class in university, or I don't know how memory leaks work, right? I could code up a pretty sick React app.
Mm.
I can't tell you what happens behind the scenes though, right? Radically accepting that and being okay with that.
Mm.
This is just an example of many, but being okay with that, with your current knowledge that you have in that current moment, is okay. And accepting that in order for you to go further, you need to tackle this and you need to tackle that and you need to tackle this. And then this is when you go through things independently and then you learn how to learn and then you apply those techniques. And then you'll find that being a lifelong learner is, I'm smiling because I'm remembering a lot of my own experiences, is that being accepting the lifelong learner approach is going to just radically allow you to accept that imposter syndrome is never going to go away.
I guess the takeaway here is if you experience the imposter syndrome or you feel like you're experiencing it, to just kind of leap into it ultimately.
Yes. And to lean into that emotion and that feeling of feeling inadequate, right? Because what is the number one fear of someone who suffers from the imposter syndrome is being found out, quote unquote. What does that mean?
I guess that's the definition of an imposter, right?
Yeah.
Someone who can be found out.
So being found out. Now, why are you going to allow yourself to be in that position to feel like, continuously looking over your shoulder, I don't want to be found out, when you have this opportunity to lean into it and to say to your peers and to say to yourself and to say to your manager and to say to everyone else, I'm good at X, Y, and Z, but I need some more work on that over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll find that their response wants might actually be very good.
Yeah,
and
it
might accommodate you on what you need.
Mm.
And then you'll find that, why do I have this fear of being found out?
Mm.
Who do I fear finding me out? Maybe it's myself.
You should own it, right?
You own it and lean into it.
So I've actually experienced this, as in, like, I've actually put what you've said into application.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I was on my journey that I mentioned earlier, like, I've spoken to my management and been like, this is what I know I'm really good at, but these are the gaps that I've identified that I need to work on. And like you just said, like, the response was actually really welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bit like daunting being kind of that vulnerable, but if you've got a great manager, their reaction can actually give you the confidence to continue doing what you're doing, but also pursuing filling in those kind of knowledge gaps that you might have. And to be honest with you, I think that managers find it helpful to their own work or to their own job that you can showcase some degree of self-awareness, and you can actually kind of self-analyze and identify certain things, and because that helps them to tailor how they engage with you and any training that they're planning or whatever to kind of help upskill you in the most appropriate way, right? That kind of benefits your career. Whereas if you don't have those kind of conversations and you're not as transparent, then it's a guessing game, right? And it becomes very like subjective, where your boss is having to kind of make an assessment based on what they see and hear, which a lot of the time is kind of indirect from kind of third parties. But if it comes directly from you, like, hey, you know, like, I'm really great at doing XYZ, but, you know, ABC I need to work on, and I want to work on D so I can reach this position or
exactly.
this level, then you give your management a focus. They can be like,
he
wow,
has a plan.
Like, this person's taking their job seriously enough that they've analyzed themselves and they've analyzed what they've done so far, and now I've got a focus for them. I can actually put a plan in place for them to actually help them to achieve their goal. So if you don't have those conversations, then ultimately it's just a guessing game. So when I did that, I felt like a huge sense of relief.
Of course.
Kind of in myself, because I was like, you know what? Like,
no doubt.
He's kind of like accepted me for like how I am. Like, he took that on board, and now we've got a plan for how I can fit in those gaps. But also, it gives your manager a chance to kind of debunk anything. So if, for instance, I remember as well, like, do you know what? Like, I still need to figure out this, like, these parts. But then, like, my manager was like, I disagree. Like, I think you're doing really well here.
So you're actually
allowing... So two or three, I agree with you. But the third one,
right.
I think you're going above and
yeah,
beyond.
And you're actually, what you're doing there is very important for the relationship between you and your manager, because you're helping your manager accelerate your acceleration.
Exactly.
Right? So it's very clever, actually, and it's a good method to dealing with that. But I think that imposter syndrome is also linked to, or contributes heavily towards, that sentence, I can't do this.
Mm.
I can't do it.
Mm.
And I think if you say that to yourself, then you are in a more difficult position in dealing with the imposter syndrome.
Mm.
I don't believe in, I can't do that.
Mm.
I believe in, that's challenging, but I'm going to keep going until I get it right.
Someone said about something similar along the lines of what you said, yeah.
Mm.
Like, wouldn't that be the same as like, fake it till you make it?
No.
So what's the difference between, I guess, kind of battling imposter syndrome and saying, do you know what? I don't know certain things, but I'm going to continue pushing forwards and faking it till you make it.
Grit. It's all about grit, perseverance, pushing through difficulty and challenges. That's not faking it. That's pushing through obstacles. Faking it is when you're jumping over obstacles and avoiding them by maybe leaning on others too much, or
taking the easy road
or not practicing them independence, you know, stuff like that. So I think it's completely different. Grit is when you accept that this is challenging, you know it's challenging, you can see this particular task in front of you, but you just keep pushing until you reach where you want to reach, and you find yourself going different routes all the time. So for example, you might, okay, I'm trying to solve a particular coding problem and I take this approach and it doesn't work. I take another approach, doesn't work, and I keep going and going and going, because I know that someone must have solved something similar to this somewhere. That's why the coding community is so good. Like, you can literally type in a question into Google and the solution will come up. And
that's true.
What's funny is that, so at work we were on Slack, I posted a link of a new tool I found. It's an AI powered tool where you would literally write, how do you reverse a string in JavaScript? So that's it's a common interview question, and it literally spits out the code on how to do it. Like, just not one solution, a few different solutions. And that's what it's about. It's about just pushing through until you find that solution. And that might take a long time. It might take a day or two or weeks or month or whatever. It's just, that is completely different to fake it until you make it. Because for me, someone sitting there with disturbing amounts of focus and time is not faking it. That's someone who has grit. That's someone who is like, he's not going to give up until you reach the solution or whatever. I'm having so many flashbacks, man. It's like, that's why I'm just smiling throughout this. It's quite amazing, actually. Yeah.
Do you think that's like the crux of the solution, like of kind of battling imposter syndrome, is that you have to kind of persevere and you have to kind of have the grit to keep on pushing?
Yes. Don't give up.
Because I suppose giving up or accepting that you're this quote unquote like imposter effectively isn't doing anyone kind of the justice, right? Like you're not kind of fulfilling your true kind of potential, right? You're kind of effectively running away or kind of avoiding that kind of completely. So I guess the main tip there is, if you feel like internally you're experiencing imposter syndrome, then just use it as a learning moment and identify kind of where you can kind of strengthen, and then just pursue relentlessly in terms of like growing in those areas and keep going until you've mastered it. And then, you know,
and that's
you're
the
on the next point of the journey of your next trip to imposter world or whatever we want to call it.
Imposter world. It's an island full of imposters. You said something important there. You said reaching your true potential. Now, this is funny because how do you know where your potential is if you don't practice grit and perseverance and you don't push through all of these uncomfortable situations, you know? And just imagine that you're in a position where everything's so easy. You don't have any challenges in your day. It's like just completely smooth, you know, from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. There's no challenges. You didn't sweat once. You didn't even use your thinking process properly. Like, it's just, you're just doing things second nature. Okay, for the first couple of days that might feel good, right? You know, but you're gonna get bored. You're gonna get bored. You're gonna sit there flicking through different tabs in Google, you know, not knowing what to do with yourself, you know. And this comes back to when we spoke about those soft lifers. You know, and it's a temporary feeling of enjoyment, but it's not a lifelong satisfaction.
Yeah, there's long-term consequences. You just reminded me of another scenario. One thing I've learned about myself, like in leadership, is that I actually like helping people and like resolving issues and stuff. So like when I first became a head or whatever, like the first time my team came to me with like an issue, like there was like a conflict or they weren't happy with a particular direction that, you know, the team or the company was going down or whatever it was, like I felt like a sense of adrenaline to like, cool, like I need to solve this for my team. I need to kind of make sure like this gets kind of rectified and like all parties are satisfied with the end result and stuff. And like you kind of get like a bit of a kind of adrenaline rush, a bit of excitement. So I kind of like those kind of like people challenges that kind of come by. It's just something that I've kind of learned about myself, is that whenever these kind of issues get raised, or even if like a cross-functional team say, oh, you know, we're not happy about the design team, like they're not doing XYZ, I'll just say, why aren't we doing that then? So it makes me kind of just want to dig in and then just like find out like what's the root cause of the problem, like what changes can we make as a kind of department to kind of improve things, make things better, make cross collaboration better, make more impact. I kind of like those kind of sporadic like challenges that creep in to your kind of day-to-day work. Because like if you feel like you're kind of imposter, you're like, damn, like, I've never come across that before, like I don't know what to do. But then going back to what you said, there's a part of you that has to kind of dig a bit deeper, have some grit, and then say, do you know what, like I'm going to figure this out. And I feel like if you kind of approach anything as a learning moment and like a chance to figure something out, then I think you always kind of enjoy your work and you always appreciate the challenges that kind of come with it. That's something that I've kind of figured out about myself and something I've learned over the last few years as well.
Yeah, I think helping others, that's why I think the role of a teacher is so satisfying, you know, because you know, you're teaching a bunch of students and then you see them, you know, accelerate and become really good at that particular thing that you've taught them, and they show a bunch of gratitude towards you, and you know, you can show a bunch of gratitude back for them being good students and stuff like that. And I think the role of the teacher is very important, and I think it runs throughout life. Like if you become a parent, you're a teacher. Like even me and you now in our 30s, we're still looking at our parents as teachers to us.
Yeah,
you know. And I think just that helping others, and especially if you're removing problems from others because you've dealt with them in the past and you're able to help them become more efficient at that problem, it's a very satisfying thing.
It is, man. I quite enjoy
fighting. I think that's the heart of being a good team player as well. You know, we always talk about, I'm a team player, I'm a good team player, you know. You go to job interviews, they're like, oh, so what makes you the perfect team player? And it's like, oh, I just, you know, show up to work at 9 a.m. and leave at 5 when everyone else leaves at 5, and I'm a great, that's not a team player, you know. Like a team player is when you are merging these different personalities in this team and you're all solving problems together, you know, and offering different skills and abilities and stuff. So I just want to touch on a point though about this imposter syndrome, and I believe believe that there's two things that if you can come to terms with and come comfortable with, then I think it will help you a lot. And that's humility and fear. Why those two though? Like, humility is, you know, no matter how high you might get in your position or in your life endeavors, you know, you always remain humble in the process. And I think if you practice humility, then you naturally have the thought process of, I'm not alone. Like, I'm just one of many who is battling this imposter syndrome, you know, is facing my daily challenges. I'm thinking right now about this stuff. I guarantee there's like 10 other people in this room thinking the same thing. You know, practicing that humility and knowing that you're not untouched. Like, it can happen to anyone, you know, and you're not alone. I think that's important. And fear is being comfortable or leaning into fear. And what do I mean by fear is fear of particular things that you have to carry out in order to meet a particular title or a position or a responsibility. So what is that thing that kind of makes us feel inadequate? It's fear. It's that fear of, I don't want to start on that task because I know it's challenging. So I'm going to procrastinate and keep it off for now. You're fearing it. So those two for me are always at the forefront of my arsenal, of my weapon against. And when I say arsenal, it's not because I treat the imposter syndrome like an enemy. It's just my defense mechanism towards this harsh friend. That's how I see it. Like, it's my defense mechanism towards a harsh friend. And why I say friend is because if you can't beat them, join them. You know, that's how I see it. And that has helped me tremendously in the last, I would say, especially the last 5 years. That's how I see the imposter syndrome. And I think that's my final take on it. Like, I don't need to go any further than that. I think that's worked for me. So I'm going to leave it there. If you've got any words of advice, Jay, then that would be appreciated.
I think that's a good way to end the show, Slot. I think hopefully we've provided, you know, kind of our tips kind of based on our own experiences for battling imposter syndrome. But just kind of one thing just to kind of remind ourselves that, like, imposter syndrome statistically is something that affects like 82% of people. So the likelihood of you listening now and having
that's an official statistic.
Yeah, from APA.
Wow.
And
it's high
enough. Like, the chances of you listening having experienced imposter syndrome or currently experiencing it is very high. So hopefully, you know, what we've discussed today, you know, kind of helps you to kind of get through it successfully, kind of reassures you and helps you to kind of grow and, you know, kind of elevate yourself to the next level and kind of realize your true potential as well. So we're going to end it there. And, you know, this has been a really interesting discussion, probably something that we need to kind of discuss again in future over the kind of broader topics of, you know, kind of mental health and kind of experiences and psychology working in the tech sector. If there are any kind of experts on the matter of kind of imposter syndrome or kind of any other things that kind of people experience within the workplace, and maybe someone from HR, you never know, who's listening, might want to kind of be on the show, we'd be more than happy to kind of have a discussion. You can leave it there. And as usual, thanks for kind of Saad being my co-host today. As always, great discussions, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you, everyone.